Hello, this is CamFM Trending, and I'm Aaron Sibosh. This show brings you the best interviews, features, and analysis from CamFM, Cambridge and Anglia Ruskin University's student radio station. Every so often, this podcast will bring you highlights from the huge range of speech-based shows available at camfm.co.uk, including our weekly news show, CamFM News Brunch. Today, here's another chance to hear my interview with the comedian Phil Wang, first broadcast in September 2023. As a former Footlight and Cambridge University engineering student, the very first radio station Phil appeared on was this very CamFM, and we talk a little about how he found his time here in Cambridge. We'll also hear about his tour Wang in There Baby, and whether, as a successful stand-up comedian, he still gets nervous up there on stage.
On air, online and across Cambridge,
your station,
your CamFM.
Find us online at camfm.co.uk.
97.2.
Your CamFM.
Phil Wang is with us here on CamFM. Hi, Phil. How are you doing? You've had a busy year so far, haven't you?
Hi, Aaron. Hello, CamFM. It's good to be back. It's been busy. Yeah, I'm always working, traveling, doing stand-up. But it's good to be on your show. I think CamFM was the first radio I was ever on.
Oh, really? Well, it's nice of you to come back after all this time.
I think so. Yeah, I think was it when I was at Cambridge, was it like 2009? a friend had a CamFM show and I went on. I was so nervous, man. And I'm nervous today.
I know. So the nerves stick with you then, even after all this time, even though you're kind of a nationally recognized figure now, the nerves stay with you before interviews, before shows.
Before shows, yeah, for sure. I found that the worst gigs I do are when I'm not nervous at all. I think you need some nerves. You need a bit of adrenaline. I think you need to be aware of the stakes and the jeopardy of getting up on stage and trying to be funny in order to be funny. I think, you know, you go up and you're complacent. It can be really bad. So, yeah, I've learned instead to just consolidate the nerves into a briefer period of time just before I'm about to go on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. Yeah. So it keeps you on your toes, I imagine, having that kind of brief burst of nerves before you go out. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it makes you present in a way.
Mm, yeah, definitely. You've spoken as well, actually, in the past about this kind of how stand-up provides a sort of structured environment to go and channel your sort of like your extrovertedness, your kind of outgoingness into an area. You're speaking, the others don't have to speak in that moment. They shouldn't speak. So is that one of the appeals for you still, the fact that people are there to see you? It's a controlled environment, stand up.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what appealed to me when I first started. And what's interesting is now that sort of autism is becoming more spoken about, and a good friend of mine written a very successful book about autism, and friends of mine have been diagnosed with autism, I've realized I think that's actually quite an autistic thing to go I'm happy to be funny in a controlled environment where there are clear rules and roles for everyone to play. And so in my older age, I'm thinking, was this like an autistic impulse that attracted me to stand up, perhaps, because I find it much more nerve-wracking to try and be funny just with a few friends at the pub. That's when my heart really goes. If I've got a joke to tell everyone and I have to wait for everyone to stop talking, my heart is pounding more than it was when I got on stage at the O2 to 7,000 people. That was far less intimidating than trying to be funny in front of good people in a social context. So yeah, all that is to say, yes, you're right.
That's fascinating. You've said as well in the past that you think comedy's basically full of introverts for the most part. Do you stand by that? Do you think that's true?
I think it's absolutely true. Yeah, for sure. Comedy is for, it's mostly by people who think too much and spend a lot of time in their own heads. And I think it's introverts who spend a lot of time in their own heads, mulling over things, going over thoughts, trying to look for different angles at things and trying to think about things in different ways. We're overthinkers, basically, comedians. And I think introverts are overthinkers, generally.
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? That contradiction between performing, as you say, in front of massive crowds, as you will be on this tour, as you have already, despite this this kind of shyness, this kind of nerviness. But I suppose, as you say, it's this kind of structure, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So I was wondering as well if we could talk a little bit about, so you've talked a lot in themes in previous shows you've done and previous work you've done about kind of your dual identity, your identity as English, as British, and also, you know, you grew up in Borneo, your Chinese Malaysian father, this kind of dual identity you have. Does this play into your latest show, or are you drawing from other themes?
Yeah, I definitely do talk about it. I think Jerry Seinfeld said every comedian's only really got 10 minutes. And I think there's truth to that. I think comedians do kind of talk about the same thing again and again and again, but in different ways with new jokes from different angles. And talking about your upbringing, your life, you one would assume that that first show you do, you get it all out. But you actually... You remember things from your early life in dribs and drabs. So I've only just remembered, for example, a time when my dad in Malaysia gave me medicine for ghosts. Like, I was scared of the dark, and my dad thought, well, better go to the Chinese medicine shop and buy him medicine to stop seeing ghosts. And, you know, that happened before my first gig. But I've only just remembered it. So I'm now talking about that story. And although it's a new story, it still plays into the same themes of my stand-up career, which is how different Chinese Malaysian life is to British life. And so I'm talking about, I think I'll probably always talk about my dual heritage.
That's really interesting, though. Do you find, though, as you kind of like develop new memories, remember new things, other things come to you, that kind of your views change over time? Your kind of the themes, your kind of the way you're approaching them changes?
Oh, yeah, I think that that's an interesting question. Maybe. I definitely see my past life differently as time goes on. And I just recently passed a kind of a benchmark? Milestone. I recently passed a milestone. I've just now lived more of my life in the UK than in Malaysia.
And wow.
That's only just happened. So the question for me now is, am I now more British than Malaysian?
That's interesting.
Yeah? So now I'm looking at my Malaysian memories from as a British person, whereas I used to look at British life as a Malaysian person.
But do you ever feel like you truly belong to either, I suppose, as this kind of this in-between state of having this Malaysian identity and also this British identity?
Well, I actually address these questions in my book, Side Splitter, which is still available in all shops. In Cambridge, presumably. Maybe even at the UL. It has to be at the UL, doesn't it?
Every book's in the UL, Phil. Yeah, every book's there. So
even memoirs?
Available at the UL, everybody.
Even memoirs, the lowest form of book.
Everything with an ISBN. You can get picture books in the ISBN, in the UL.
That's mad, isn't it? I didn't set foot in the UL once in my 4 years.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
I think I took out one book in my entire degree because we didn't have books in engineering.
You don't have any books in engineering, just not needed
no
at
books.
All.
None. It was all notes.
To be honest, I do a subject with books, and even for me, I don't want to step foot in there. It's a scary place. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I wonder in general how you look back at Cambridge now. Like, what was that experience like for you? Obviously, you're in the footlights while you were here in Cambridge. What are your memories of it now?
My memories of it are of an extreme intensity. The second year of engineering was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It was so difficult. It was so much work. I was always nodding off in supervisions because between comedy and engineering second year, I had no time to sleep. I was just absolutely exhausted. And I promised myself, I will never work this hard again. And I have stuck to that promise.
That's good. I mean, you're setting your boundaries, aren't you, with that? But do you think it's necessary to have a drive to get to where you've gotten? Do you think it was necessary to have that difficult experience to then take you through to where you are today?
Well, I think the interesting thing about drive and about authentic drive is that it doesn't feel like drive at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like work at the time. I mean, in the, my engineering degree felt like work for sure, but the comedy didn't feel like work. It just felt like I was just being taken down a stream in a current, you know. And looking back now, I'm like, wow, I don't have the energy I used to. I had so much energy back then, but at the time there was no question about whether or not I was going to do these things. I just was. And I think that's youth, that's ambition, that's and I think people who are at Cambridge have that about them. But I couldn't do it again now. But at the same time, at the time, it didn't feel like work. It was all very exciting, and again, yeah, like I say, it felt like I was just going along with the current.
The best work perhaps doesn't feel like work. Yeah, fascinating.
Not at the time.
Yeah, not at the time, but perhaps in hindsight. Yeah, fascinating. Okay. So wang in there, baby, a little bit. Then tell us just a little bit about this new show. What can audiences expect?
I'd say it's my silliest show. I'm allowing myself to be silly, to be playful, to be a little more not abstract, but surreal. And it's a quite dynamic show. In my previous shows, I used to get bogged down in the words of the show, and I'd go, this is the show, this is sort of the script of the show, and I have to stick to it. And I've let go of that this time, and I'm just sort of being very fluid about it, moving bits around, changing bits up, writing lots of new material, and just keeping it a sort of living, breathing thing. And so hopefully people can expect a kind of a freshness to it and a silliness.
So the show varies night to night then? There's quite a bit of difference.
Like night to night, minuscule bits, but from week to week, probably a bit more.
Okay, it's fascinating.
They say art's never finished, only abandoned, right? And I guess that's the stage that the show is in.
Exactly. I wonder as you keep producing more stand-up shows, do you think you'll ever run out of wang puns to use as your titles?
Fortunately, a lot of words seem to rhyme with Pang, for instance. I don't know if the pun thing will go on forever. I never intended to be a pun title comedian. It sort of fell into my lap with the last one. Maybe.
We'll have to watch this space, perhaps.
There are a lot of Ang words.
There's a lot of sounds you can do with that. I think you're probably good for a few years yet to come for now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can see you 30th of September at the Corn Exchange, yeah?
That's right. 30th, let me check my calendar. Yes, 30th of September at the Corn Exchange.
That's good. So people know where to find you. Where can they go online to find out more?
Oh, philwang.co.uk.
That's nice and easy, isn't it?
Shit with a Patriots URL.
Thanks for listening to this edition of CamFM Trending. Why not subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and give us a rating so that other people can find us. There's plenty more where this podcast came from over on camfm.co.uk, or you can tune into 97.2 FM if you're in the Cambridge area to get a range of speech and music content from Cambridge and ARU's student radio station. Until the next time, adios.